And joining me now on the line from Israel, and it's an interview that I confess I've been looking forward to all day, is Gad Shimon, journalist, author, and former Mossad operative. Gad, thank you so much for joining us here on the Home Run. How complex do you estimate the operation to retrieve Eli Cohen's artifacts was? Any idea?
Well, first of all, I would like to correct you. Sorry for doing it publicly.
It's okay.
The operation to bring those artifacts from Damascus was not in order to commemorate the event, the tragic event of hanging Eli Cohen. It was part of a long-going operation for many years, because Eli Cohen is really a myth in Israel. You know, he's one of the founding fathers of let's say the Israeli intelligence. The name in the world. You know, if you ask somebody in Papua New Guinea who was Eli Cohen, maybe you will get the right answer because he's so famous. Now, I say this because I have a good friend who used to be what we call Lochem. Lochem is a combatant. He was an Israeli undercover spy in Damascus, like Eli Cohen. And he told me that already back in the 80s, he was asked to go and try and find out as much information as he could get about the whereabouts of Eli Cohen's body, you know, because he was buried in secrecy and nobody. So what I want to say is that there is a long-going operation to bring back to Israel as many artifacts as possible. And, of course, it will be finished only when the body of Eli Cohen will be brought back to Israel for proper burial.
Gad, among the 2,500 items that were recovered, are you aware of any documents that might be able to or have already shed new light on Cohen's interactions with Syrian officials?
Well, you know, I don't know because I haven't seen the documents yet. I believe it will shed a lot of new light about the last days of Eli Cohen. Just remember, Eli Cohen was active in Damascus for almost, I think, 4 years, which is a very long time for a combatant, for what we call an undercover spy in a hostile enemy country. Usually they do it for a shorter time, period of time. And I'm sure that the new documents will reveal new details about how exactly he was caught, how was the interrogation, etc. Even though, you know, many items, many details have been published already during those last 60 years or so,
Gad,
50 years.
If you don't mind, without revealing your age, I'm guessing that you were a teenager when 60 years ago Eli Cohen was hanged. Do you have any memory of that day that you can share with us? What was it like in Israel when the news came through that he'd been publicly hanged?
Yes, well, you know, you're right. At the time I was, 15 years old, high school student. And when he was caught, January 1965 is called in the Israeli intelligence community annals Black January, because one after the other, Eli Cohen was caught in Damascus, and another Israeli spy, Israeli undercover spy, was exposed in Egypt. It happened, you know, within a few days. And I remember the shock of it because, you know, since 1948, hundreds of Israelis, men and women, were employed and operated undercover in Arab countries, Arab capitals. By the way, many of them are South African-born Israelis. And actually, we know very little about very few of them, because only those who were exposed
are the ones we know about.
We are the ones we know, exactly.
Exactly.
You know, this is, if you want to know, this is one of the absurdities of intelligence community.
I always think, like, I want to say Eli Cohen is the most famous Israeli spy, but then I think, hang on, the fact that we know about him is what ended his career of being a spy. But, Gad, if you don't mind, if I can share a personal story with you and our listeners. I lived and worked in Israel for 18 years, and I often went to Syria for the Russian television. And I visited the public square where Eli Cohen was hanged, and I remember silently saying Kaddish and laying some stones there. And it was a hugely, hugely moving experience for me. Because, of course, the Mossad has been searching for Cohen's burial site for decades. Do we have, or do you know, of any clues or leads? Could we ever find his burial site and be able to bring him back home to be buried?
You know, being a Zionist, you have to be an optimist. Otherwise, what the hell are we doing here? So I'm an optimist. but I'm afraid that regarding the burial place of Eli Cohen, it will be very, very difficult to find it. First of all, because we know probably where it is. We know that he was buried in secrecy, and a road was paved over it. And one of the problems is that, you know, so many years have passed since then that I'm afraid that very few, if any, Syrian officials who took part in this secret burial are still with us. So it might be that, you know, the fate of Eli Cohen's body will be like Ron Arad, you know, the Israeli Air Force pilot, whom we don't know anything about his whereabouts and what happened to him. The same thing about the burial place of Eli Cohen. I'm afraid this part of the big operation to bring back as many evidence and articles as possible, this part will not be successful, I'm afraid.
I know that his wife is still alive, and if I'm not mistaken, his brother Morris passed away. Does the family still hold out hope that his body will ever return to Israel?
Well, you know, I know Nadia Cohen personally. I had lunch with her a few times. She's a very courageous woman. Of course, now she's quite old. She was very moved when she was presented with the those artifacts coming from Damascus lately. You know, the family, of course, they want to know as many details as possible. And they have many questions about, for example, you know, when Eli Cohen was here for the last time in a secret home leave at the end of 1964, he stated to his operators that he's afraid that he's about to be exposed. And they pushed him for one more, one more operation in Damascus. And of course, in the family, there is some bad feelings that he was pushed too hard. And of course, with the time, there are so many stories about why he was captured, why was he exposed. Was it due to a technical failure? Was it due to maybe he was overzealous and he was sending too much information? Maybe he was careless? You know, nobody knows exactly. I think that some more information about this will be exposed in the next few days when those documents will be thoroughly analyzed. And of course, the family would like to know as much as possible about the fate of you know, the father of the family who disappeared and paid his life for doing the extreme thing for the security of Israel.
Gad, there's a question from Anton, and it's something I've actually heard myself, and I have no idea if it's true. And he's asking, is it true about Eli Cohen that he visited the Syrian lookouts, the gun emplacements in the Golan, and since it was so hot, he suggested trees be planted and grown for shade? In the Six-Day War, the IDF knew exactly where to find and destroy the places, even though they were camouflaged. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, that's a nice story. And
is it not true? I loved it. I loved that story.
I'm afraid, you know, I think people exaggerate the importance of Eli Cohen's visits to the Golan Heights because this was not his main mission. The details, and now I speak as an ex-intelligence officer and Mossad operative, the intelligence he brought about the Syrian line in the Golan Heights Could have been also brought together by aerial reconnaissance and other means. We didn't need Helicoin on top of the Golan Heights in order to know where the Syrian line is.
Okay.
It's some kind of, how should I say, an intelligence legend, which is a very good one. You know, legends are good. A myth is a good thing sometimes to have. His main mission was to get insights of the inner high echelons of the Syrian regime and bring back those information, those tactical details of where a gun emplacement is, etc. A simple air reconnaissance could bring it just as, maybe even better.
Gad, does the Mossad still conduct operations at such a deep level, like we saw with Eli Cohen, infiltrating far into an enemy country? Or has it shifted towards recruiting assets remotely from behind enemy lines?
Well, you know, actually, I don't really know, because I'm out for so many years. But one of the best arms of the Mossad have been always what we call human intelligence, which means recruiting human sources in enemy countries. I know that today, with all the new technology, it is very difficult to send somebody to Damascus like we did with Eli Cohen, you know, just falsify an Argentinian passport, probably in a better quality than the official Argentinian state printer had done, and, build up a cover story and send him to Damascus. Today, it is much more difficult due to all the new technologies. I would like to remind you that today, the lowest level policeman sitting in Damascus airport with a computer has more information at his disposal than Hoover, you know, at his heydays in the FBI, ever had. And as far as I know, there is more and more reliance on technology, but still this kind of operation of having our men, you know, an Israeli in, let's say, Tehran, or in, I don't know where else, in Damascus. Damascus today is a very chaotic place. But yes, I do believe that there are still Israeli citizens working undercover in some very dangerous places.
Gad, Iran's presence in Syria has been a growing concern. How does this influence Israel's intelligence and defense operations?
Sorry, there was a blip on your question. Sure. I didn't get it. Can you repeat it, please?
Iran's presence in Syria is, of course, a growing concern. How does this influence Israel's intelligence and defense operations?
Well, you know, the last few months we have seen a thorough upheaval in the Middle East situation. The fact that Iran had lost all its proxies except the Houthis in Yemen, and the fact that there is a new regime in Syria, which actually in Israel we still don't know how to handle it and how to face it and how to take it into account, because it seems that the new prime minister he's sick and tired of the Iran's intervention in Syrian internal affairs. But still, those are things that will be exposed later, I think, during the next few months. Of course, Tehran is not Tehran. I would like to make it clear. Israel and the Israelis, we have nothing against the Iranian people. Iran and Israel used to be the best friends, the besties, you know, in the Middle East, because we have common interests, you know, and it's obvious to anybody who is looking at the map. The reason that Iran is so hostile to Israel is only because of its leadership. Mm. And, you know, among intelligence communities in the world, the big question is not if the Ayatollahs will finally be thrown out, but only when will it happen? Will it happen before they have a finger on the red button of a nuclear weapon? Or, you know, who knows? So the Iranian leadership is the main enemy of Israel, and Israel, of course, is doing the best it can to prevent any physical threat on the state of Israel.
And Gad, just one last question, because you spoke earlier about the importance of human intelligence. If I can ask you for your opinion, October the 7th, do you think it happened because of a failure of Israeli human intelligence?
No doubt. This is, you know, unfortunately, here in Israel, even though we have such a great intelligence community, it seems that every 50 years we are being surprised by something that actually we had all the information about it. You know, there's no doubt that the information about Hamas 7th of October attack was in Israel. We knew about it. The plans were here, but there was a concept. You know, it's like. Sorry that I make a relation with what happened. Let's say in the Second World War in June 1941, the Russian intelligence told Stalin, Germany is going to attack. Germany is going to attack. Nazi Germany is going to invade. But Stalin, he had this concept that Hitler is his best friend and Germany has no interest right now to attack Russia, and therefore he disregarded all this detailed information. The same thing happened in Israel here in October. This is no doubt, it's the biggest failure of Israel intelligence, second only to Yom Kippur 1973. And I hope that all lessons were learned and it will not happen again. But, you know, who knows? Unfortunately, shit happens. Sorry my language.